The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's selection of offbeat, underground, and independent literature can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop, and there you can also see a complete list of their events. This week, I am airing an interview that I did while I was in Berlin at the International Anarchist Radio Conference a couple weeks ago, interviewing an LGBT anarchist activist named Saskia about some history and the state of LGBT anarchist activism in Berlin right now. But first, here is an announcement from Asheville Anti-Racism.
Can you tell folks who you're affiliated with and what sort of work y'all do?
First of all, we would like to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. We think y'all are great. Well, that's a short question with a long answer. Asheville Anti-Racism is a group of folk that are trying to battle everyday racism as well as systematic white supremacy upheld by the state. We support many struggles, and our name does not really cover that. The name Asheville Anti-Racism, Fascism, Sexism, Homophobia, Transphobia, Ableism, Capitalism, Colonialism does have a more accurate description, but it's a bit long, and even then, it's definitely missing a few things that we stand against. AAR seeks to fill a void in this area when it comes to anti-racist work. By staying out of the spotlight, we have the ability to leak information on hate groups and organizers without compromising the safety of our members. We have and will continue to dox white nationalist recruiters and KKK members locally and nationally. They want to hide, but we expose them as the racists they are. Once the information is out, the community does most of the work, really. We also show up and sometimes organize protests and support many causes. We are just one part of the struggle for true equality. We are our own group, but we work with Torch Antifa, which rose from the ashes of ARA, as well as Antifa International, which does anti-fascist prisoner support. We also stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, a movement that is very important right now and for the future. We raise money to support travel expenses to and from regional actions and offset the printing costs of flyers, pamphlets, and stickers. We also help raise money for Antifa International's Prisoner Defense Fund.
So there's a benefit concert organized for tonight, Sunday the 17th of 2016. Can you tell us about it?
We're very excited about tonight's benefit at the auditorium in West Asheville. Not only is there going to be a show, we're also holding a free street medic training workshop at 5 p.m. This will cover action prep, situational awareness, police weapons, and treating pepper spray or gas, and after-action detox. Food Nut Bombs will be there serving food afterwards, then we get to rock out. Around 9, the show starts with all local bands, including Otar, Weak Wrists, Lacrimosa, Comfort Creature, and Pleasant. We will be tabling, so come get your anti-racist gear and literature to support us. Oh, and you can also have tons of fun, because they have a pinball table.
And this concert is to help prep for the upcoming counter-demonstration, right? What's the deal with Stone Mountain, Georgia?
The donations we get from the show are going to be funding people to counter-protest the openly white power march up Stone Mountain, Georgia. The people organizing and attending the event Rock Stone Mountain are known KKK members, neo-Nazis, and a hodgepodge of white supremacists that don't get out much. We intend to camp out the night before and disrupt their plans the next day. We're working with local organizers and expect to see a large counter to this white power event. Stone Mountain is a historic site for the KKK. This is not the first time they've done this, but it is getting a lot more attention than previous events because it had Billy Roper's name attached to it. Roper was at one point leader of Aryan Nations and was then booted out and formed his own clan, which also failed. Billy is still at his same old games and actually backed out of claiming involvement with what looks like a losing battle before it begins. This is only 7 weeks after being the media spokesperson for the event.
Why do people think it's important to show up to counter clan-related camping in this largely symbolic venue and event?
The absence of opposition would imply consent to a white supremacist march up Stone Mountain, which was the birthplace of the second era of the KKK. This is not speculation, this is fact. Almost everybody that plans on attending the White Power March is a Trump supporter. The fact that Trump is doing so well in the polls shows a serious problem with racism in our country today. We need to expose, oppose, and educate.
And what could people planning to attend expect to experience, do you think?
Cops. Lots of cops. The park feels that they are legally obligated to allow this march, so they've called in more police. The second thing to expect is quite a bit of confusion and some disorder. First off, there will be a counter-protest that will also be carrying Confederate flags. This group claims a heritage not hate stance on the Confederate flag. And third, there's going to be a bunch of counter-protesters in what is usually a family-friendly park. Really, who knows what is going to happen?
If someone wants to engage at Stone Mountain, what would you suggest are good ways to plug in? Where can folks find out more info, and how can they keep up on things that AAR is organizing towards?
We're working with All Out ATL and suggest people look into that group if they're not in the Asheville area. If you wanted to attend from the local area, hit us up online at AshevilleAntiRacism@riseup.net or come to the show tonight for more information on the counter protest and the campout. We have a secure camp location, motorcade, and free food for anybody who wants to contact us.
Thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having us on, and keep up the great work.
Oh, shucks. A few updates from the U.S. about prisons. Since April 4th, prisoners in at least four Texas prisons have been on strike for better conditions and on an end to slavery and human rights abuses. The strike is but the latest in a nationwide mass movement inside prisons for dignity and freedom. Minimum wage in the Texas prisons is $0 per hour. Access to medical care requires a $100 medical copay. Striking prisoners are put in lockdown in an attempt to, quote, conceal the strike, unquote, and the battle of wills is being daily tested by the inhumanity of the administration. No lights, two peanut butter sandwiches a day, no phone, mail, or visitations from the outside world, and likely far worse. Since the strike's inception, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, TDCJ, has been trying to contain the strike and paint the strikers as causing harm to inmates and families, threatening additional lockdowns, forced transfers, violence, and even statewide lockdown. The Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, IWOC, believes TDCJ's actions to be an intentional, routine tactic. Quote, they're trying to change who the enemy is, unquote, said Nick Unwukwe, co-chair of IWOC and a former prisoner. Quote, trying to get you to believe the enemy isn't the slave master. It's the slave who sits down and says, enough, unquote. Increasingly, lockdowns are becoming reality. Already, there are additional lockdowns at Jester 3, Dalhart, and Beddo, partial lockdowns at Caulfield and Allred, and a confirmed order for lockdown at Michael for this morning, April 16th. Is the strike spreading? Will TCDJ's tactics backfire? We may be at a tipping point. IWOC and prisoners, family, and supporters are requesting shows of solidarity from the outside. If you hate slavery in the U.S. under the guise of the prison industrial complex, there are a few suggestions on getting involved. You could contact family and friends in prison and clue them in to the strikes. You could organize a local group to engage folks in jail and prison and hear their concerns. You could talk to your neighbors, churchmates, schoolmates, co-workers who may have folks on the inside and talk about what's going on. You can join the call in you can join the call-in campaigns or demonstrate outside the facility. More info from the IWW Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee can be found at their webpage, iwalk.noblogs.org. They can be reached at iwoc@riseup.net or by phone at 816-866-3808. That's 816-866-3808. Visit the site to find out more numbers and addresses to direct grievances about the treatment of Texas prisoners and continued conditions of enslavement in the U.S. prison complex. In related news, on April 9, 2016, three prisoners at David Wade Correctional Center in Homer, Louisiana, went on hunger strike. Three were also on what is called extreme suicide, which is where they place you in full restraints, chains, that is, shackles and handcuffs attached to a waist chain. This is done for days at a time. They're also on, quote, strip, unquote, dressed down in paper gown. The torturous, punitive conditions here at David Wade Correctional Center have gone on long. From a letter from someone incarcerated at the facility, quote, the torturous, punitive conditions here at David Wade Correctional Center have gone on long enough. The sadistic practices by security and the administration are a violation of human rights and decency. The administration has admitted to the infliction of corporal punishment against prisoners in lockdown. Just now, as I write, they sprayed a prisoner while he was on his knees and struck him several times. They also sprayed and beat another prisoner who is mentally ill and has been on for over a year. Unquote. The letter continues, quote, please call if you can. Just a phone call will spook them. Thank you. The Department of Corrections Secretary James M. LeBlanc can be reached at 255-342-6740. That's Department of Corrections Secretary James M. LeBlanc, 255-342-6740. The Deputy Secretary Eugene Powers can be reached at 255-342-6744. That's 342-6744. And Undersecretary Thomas Bickham can be reached at 255-342-6739. For more information on this, you can visit the SF Bayview newspaper's website, sfbayview.com, and search for Urgent Call to Support Tortured Hunger Strikers. Finally, notes from two prisoners in the North Carolina system requesting help came to us recently. Kevin Cox is a politically active prisoner struggling at the moment just to be able to receive mail and contact from the outside. He asks that his statement be shared with anyone who might care to help call into the prison. Since he wrote this, he's been transferred to Marion CI, but is still facing the same issues. Quote, greetings, shalom aleika, salam aleikum, amani. My name is Kevin Cox, number 1217063. I'm a political prisoner who's being housed at Birdie Correctional Institution in Windsor, North Carolina. Since my incarceration, I've dedicated my life to the struggle by fighting for the rights of prisoners, human rights for all oppressed peoples, and the rights for LGBTQ. Also, I'm a dedicated member of the Black Liberation Movement and a member of the New African Black Panther Party, distinct from the New Black Panther Party, which is a legal above-ground political organization. At Birdie Corrections, I've been treated as a, quote, slave, unquote, because of my political beliefs, my continuous activism in educating prisoners, and my refusal to be submissive to Birdie Corrections' oppressive rules and regulations, which correlates to division, miseducation, provoking black-on-black violence, and racism. As a result of my resistance, they, officers and staff, have stopped the flow of mail that comes from the outside support, such as family, friends, and comrades, have prevented me from receiving books, pamphlets, and newspapers, and have denied me my, quote, due process right, unquote, to be notified of the censorship of my property. The SRG, or Security Risk Group, intelligence officers read my mail that is stamped legal without my being present, when my legal mail usually refers to my criminal case, lawsuits, etc. And the SRG officers are trying to, quote, SRG, unquote, me, after I adamantly disavowed and denied affiliation with any security risk group. I'm telling you this because I need your help. I want to start a telephone and fax campaign to the administration demanding that they quit these egregious tactics that violate my constitutional rights. Marion CI, you can ask for Lieutenant Daniel Merrill or Captain Michael Long, can be reached at 828-659-7810. That's 828-659-7810. The North Carolina Director of Prisons is George Solomon, and he can be reached at 919-838-4000. That's 919-838-4000. The other prisoner is Jimmy Milton. He's an active voice in prison struggle at Birdie CI and has faced repeated violations of religious rights as a Hebrew Israelite. He has not been provided kosher meals, was not allowed to participate in Passover, and has not been able to order relevant religious materials. According to Jimmy, quote, I've already filed my grievance here at the facility, and my next step is my hunger strike. The people I need for you to call and speak to are as follows. Birdie CI Superintendent Herring, or Assistant Superintendent Clark, can be reached at 252-794-8610. That's CI Superintendent Herring or Assistant Superintendent Clark, and they're at 252-794-8601. More info on prisoner resistance in the U.S. and how to engage in it can be found at supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org. And also, there's an interesting firsthand account by anarchist prisoner Michael Kimball, who's warehoused in the Alabama prison system, on the recent riots and ongoing struggles of prisoners there, as well as organizing by the Free Alabama Movement. And this can be found at anarchylive.noblogs.org.
The first question I have is, would you be willing to introduce yourself and say a bit about what you do, and how would you describe your politics?
Yeah. My name is Saskia, S-A-S-K-I-A. I would consider myself as anarchist without adjectives, anarchist and feminist or anarcha-feminist. Mm-hmm. Because I'm more connected to the feminist word.
Yeah.
More emotional boundaries, I think.
In feminism?
Yeah. I first came to the anarchist movement maybe 21, 22 years ago. I was considered male at birth. It took me quite a long time to start my transition, and then it was a long time to become part of the feminist movement because trans women were not that mm-hmm. popular. It's much better now than it was 9 years ago. So I do some feminist stuff and some anarchist stuff and some things in between, or the mixed both things. I'm part of that organization called Trans Interqueer, or TRIC. It's www.transinterqueer.org, our homepage. Most of us are queer, trans, or inter people.
Gotcha. Intersex, you mean?
Yeah, intersex okay. people. Many of us are feminists, left-wing, alternative. Some of us are anarchists.
Word.
Some of us not. In terms of gender, we speak with one of our voices, I would say.
Oh, gotcha.
I would call it gender anarchy. The organization TRIC doesn't do that much with, maybe we don't have that other themes.
Mm-hmm.
It's concentrated on gender, or then sometimes the intersections between
yes.
gender and race, gender and class, things like that. It's a mixture between an NGO and a self-organized group for that, maybe even trans liberation, inter-liberation group,
gotcha.
intersex liberation group. And then I'm part of the Friedel. This is the place where we are now. Some kind of left alternative or anarchist space. Not all of us are anarchists, but many are.
Gotcha.
Many of us are part of the Anarchist Federation, the German Anarchist Federation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a worldwide
yeah.
kind of structure, yeah.
International Federation of Anarchists, we're part of that.
Is it fairly active in Berlin?
Yeah, it depends on maybe 25 people or so. There's three groups and some individuals. Yeah, we have that radio group,
mm-hmm.
the anarchist radio, and the anarchist group Neukölln, they're very active. Maybe this is the biggest anarchist group in Berlin.
Will you talk a little bit, or just say a few words about the TRIC, the queer group?
Yeah. Well, we started 10 years ago. There was the thing that we had the Sunday club, Sonntagsclub, which was more homonormative or heteronormative. The trans people were part of it. It was founded in the former GDR, but there was that thing, there were some conflicts around the non-binary people and the intersex people mm-hmm. and the not heteronormative or homonormative trans people.
Right.
And now the conflicts with lesbian trans women, the other lesbians wouldn't accept them. So others found a trigger. I only became part of it maybe half a year after it was founded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I started my transition,
mm-hmm.
I quickly became part of TRIC and I stayed with it up to now. Yeah, there's the problem. Some of us are paid and we get parts of the money by the Berlin government. It's a bit difficult, but it's a kind of strange mixture between an NGO and or some kind of social welfare thing
yeah.
in self-organization. It's a conflict a bit.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like you have in many. This is a German thing. Because of that, cooptation has a problem.
You mentioned that it was kind of like social work, a mix between a social work and an mm-hmm. NGO. What kind of projects does it do?
Oh, God, there are loads of projects. There's that Trans Visible project that focuses on the visibility of trans people. There are different groups. We have that trans femininity group.
Okay.
I'm part of it. And Trans Men Gender Boys group is another group. Then there's a Trans in English group, because many trans people in Berlin don't speak German that well.
Okay.
Well, loads of other groups. It's so big now, I can't... We had an Orga meeting, took some hours. We have that newsletter. This is maybe 30 dates in a month. Yeah, there's a lot of work. But it's also fun. For me, it's fun. I'm not paid for it. I just do it because I want to do it and think it's a good thing. And we have a good time there, working together.
And has it gotten to be more of a welcoming space for trans women?
Yeah. Yeah, more and more. When I started transitioning, there was that mood against femininity. Mm-hmm. Or you don't, or against, because I'm just female, I'm nowhere in between. Mm-hmm. That was a problem, because it was like, political lesbian scene in Berlin was very butchy and very male-centered. There was a thing that trans men were very popular, or maybe more non-binary trans masculinities were very popular and part of the feminist scene already.
Definitely.
But trans women were not.
Yes.
Not that much. This has changed a lot because, yeah, me and other trans feminities, we built some kind of network with cis women inside that are more feminine and femmes like that, because many of us call themselves femme. So it has changed a lot.
That's really, really good to hear.
Yeah, the queer feminist scene has become more and more inclusive. That's the other thing with that racist problems, and it's not that white anymore. It was totally white. Most of the projects are so extremely white, and they're not that extremely white anymore.
Gotcha.
Maybe some still are, but others are not anymore.
It's good to hear that has changed in Berlin for a lot of reasons. But for me, it is still a very big problem, this issue of trans feminine and femme exclusion in LGBT or so-called radical queer spaces in the United States. And it's something that we are very much still struggling with, and it's nice to hear. I mean, nothing is ever gonna be completely purged of femme phobia or what's called trans misogyny in the States.
It's called the same term, transmisogyny.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really helpful term.
You still have that kind of persons that don't like femininity at all. They mix it with that gender role thing. They think, yeah, female people are just female because of patriarchy and because they want to be loved by men, but otherwise you could say, yeah, you try to look like men because you want to be accepted by men. It's just nonsense, because people have their gender identity or gender stratum, maybe called that way, and that has nothing to do with that gender roles. They are just constructed around. But I'm not more feminine if I wear a skirt.
No, absolutely, and and also the like, you are feminine because you want to be loved by men is still centered in patriarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Maybe you're feminine because you're feminine.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it has absolutely nothing to do with men.
Yeah. But you have that other problem that trans men are not seen as men by many feminists. So many trans men don't like to go to that queer feminist events that much, because their masculinity is not seen that well. They're treated like women.
For sure.
And they don't like it.
Yeah, that sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, this issue of like the kind of subtle patterns of inclusion and exclusion regarding trans masculinities and trans femininities, because in the States at least, the inclusion of trans men into such spaces that you described is conditional, but also feels a little bit more, feels like a stronger, like a slightly stronger acceptance than I have noticed trans femininity experiencing. And that both exclusions by of transmasculine and transfeminine people are riding on or predicated on a misunderstanding yeah. of everyone involved. But I've noticed trans men benefiting somewhat more from these patterns of exclusion. It's a degree of experience, yeah. I think, but it's in a very important one, I think, to acknowledge.
You have to see that there are other projects, maybe not that much anymore in Berlin, but in other cities where they don't even discuss about trans men attending there. No, they just have a discussion about trans women. Maybe some trans women can go there, but no trans men, no other trans identities. Just trans women. At the end, they say not even trans women. Okay, they are women, but they have that male they're socialized male. So on, and trans men, no way. So these are other projects that have it like that, but not that much in Berlin. Yeah, there's a feminist group, I think, they're called Störenfrieder in Hannover, and they disbanded because of the conflict. Should we include trans femininities or trans women? And just happened a few weeks ago.
You know, in a way, I can't believe we're still talking about this because, I mean, not we personally, you and I, but like we as a society.
Yeah.
Because to say that somebody who is a trans woman has male privilege is very dangerous and is a complete misunderstanding of trans femininity. Just, you know, I don't think that one can have male privilege if one is a woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Maybe if you pass as male, but there are so many... there are very few times I remember this, it is really a privilege.
Yeah.
Most of the time, then... because then I have to act like a man and I'm not male.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't work out for me. It doesn't work anymore. But your listeners can't see me. But you have to know that there's still Alice Schwarzer that is considered by part of the media as the most popular German feminist. I don't think she's feminist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she's racist and she's totally anti-trans. And she still says trans men are women and trans women are men. Maybe she's not that evil like Sheila Jeffries or Julie Bindel, but she basically talks the same nonsense that she talked 30 years ago, like against every kind of sex work, against every kind of pornography. But it's an older generation, the younger feminists, like you have that popular Missy magazine. It's quite popular and they're all queer feminists.
Okay.
And they're some of them are trans and they're absolutely trans-friendly and it's no problem there. And they see all that racist bourgeois stuff that happened in the second wave feminist movement in Germany during the 1970s and try not to do the mistakes again. So Missy magazine is quite representative for large parts of the feminist movement. It's more like, pop culture, and it's more, many people would find it nice to read some the Missy magazine, but they're queer feminists and they're radical.
That's cool.
But more in a nice way. Not like that. You have also that Anschläger from Austria. It's also queer feminist. But it's very, very open, radical queer feminist, anarcho-feminist stuff more.
And are they trans-inclusive?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have any bigger feminist thing going on besides the Alice Schwarzer's newspaper, Emma. There are no bigger feminist things going on in German-speaking world that are trans exclusive. Very small stuff of it. Yeah, another problem is that with the gay and lesbian scene, but... No, it's not that problem with the political lesbian scene that is maybe not... They tend to organize with heteros and with... Are they called heteros in English too?
Straight women, or
queer? Yeah, straight. Yes, yeah. So the lesbian political lesbians tend to do more stuff with straight women, with trans men, but not with gay cis males. There are some, there is some stuff that is called schwul lesbisch, gay lesbian, but it's most of it is pretty much dominated by men. But some of the projects in Berlin, like the Schwutz, the big Schwulenzentrum, gay center.
Mm-hmm.
Is very inclusive, It's quite good there normally. And it's quite big. Cool. They have big parties, like a commercial club, but it's some kind of organization. Not everything is commercial there. There are also left-wing, left alternative, and many queer people there. They have queer, very, very queer parties from time to time there. Yeah, and they have many connections with the radical left scene in Berlin. So this is the Schwutz, and then the gay museum, Schwutz Museum, is also very, very inclusive. They're not that... They have that name still because they were founded during the 1970s. It's the same thing with the Siegessäule newspaper. It's a commercial newspaper. It doesn't cost you anything, but they are paid by advertisement. So it's quite... they're trying not to be too radical leftist. Yeah, they need the money from the advertising. And the Siegessäule is still quite male-centered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the biggest magazine in Berlin. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than every other magazine in Berlin.
It's good that there are some other resources that are for people who aren't men.
Yeah.
Too. Would you... you've spoken a lot about trans exclusion and some of the resources that are here, but are there any specific issues in Berlin that are of pressing concern to trans people nowadays? Or LGBTQ people these days?
Well, there's still the problem of violent attacks.
Yeah.
By sexist, racist or right-wing people. Quite often it's a combination of racism and sexism because there are some POC trans people in Berlin too. Mm-hmm. And they get attacked quite often if they don't look like straight male, straight women, straight female people. And this is really a big problem. It happens from time to time. Yeah, this is more like just sexism. When I think about sexist attacks, are quite often like if you're seen as female, you get attacked because you're female, not because you're trans.
Yeah.
Because most of the, and even some of them realize that you are trans, but this is not their problem. It's that you are female because they don't have a problem with trans. They have a problem with women. So this is still a big problem. Other problems are that kind of that classist thing that. More proletarian trans people have it more difficult to get things if they need some things like operation stuff and so.
For sure.
It's much more easier if you have bourgeois parents.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that academical university thing that the queer feminist scene is quite exclusive in a way that you have to be able to talk in a certain language. And, then there are so many conflicts. Maybe they are fueled by that Facebook thing.
Facebook.
Yeah, but many people had very traumatizing violence happening during their lifetime, very violent experiences. And some of them tend to be aggressive against others. And there's so many conflicts. There's that capitalist thing going on. So... there's very much bitter and harsh infighting within the queer feminist or anarcho-feminist scene. What is a very good thing is that the anarchist scene is no longer that manarchist thing that much. Cool. You have that older project, you have that older guys that behave like gurus, but the younger males inside the anarchist movement are quite nice. Nearly no one of them is that macho guy anymore. Because many of them... became part of the anarchist scene because it isn't that macho and that sexist, many of the males. And you don't have that, like it's another part of society, that barrier between gay and straight men that much anymore. Mm-hmm. So no one will say anything if two men kiss in an anarchist group.
Word.
It's just, sometimes they call themselves hetero, but sometimes they have some kind of relationship with the same sex. And it was... 20 years ago, the anarchist scene was really manarchist. And most of the anarchist women organized separately. We still have that separatist thing going on, but all the anarcho-feminists are now do some kind of... Yeah, we do some feminist stuff, maybe without cis men, but we do other stuff with cis men. Yeah, maybe not with openly sexist cis men. So it's the same thing that I do. Because there are other problems. There's not only sexism. You have other problems in society when you have to work with men. You can't solve racism without men.
In my opinion, also, we all need to work together to have more power and to have more minds working on it, you know, who come from all sorts of different experiences, too. You mentioned before the interview, we were talking a little bit about the practice of, like, anti-fascist organizing in Berlin. And I, before coming here, was unaware of the scope of fascist presence or Nazi presence in Berlin. I thought there was probably some, but I didn't know the extent to which. And you spoke a little bit about feeling unable to participate fully in, like, militancy because of intersections of gender and presentation and all of those things. Is that a thing that many people are talking about here? Like, people who are unable to perhaps be more militant because people are more vulnerable?
In former times, nearly all of the Antifa groups, they're called in Germany, were very male-dominated, very macho. It has changed a lot during the last years, although there are that new kind of Maoist, Stalinist groups that are some kind of backlash. Yeah, but they don't mix that much with the more anti-authoritarian, anarchist, anti-fascist groups. Well, I know many that are no cismen that are quite good with fight Nazis and sexists in a confrontational way. And, yeah, they beat them up. Sure. So we have, there are loads of martial arts groups that are without cismen or that include all genders and try to include other genders. The Kupi Fight Club is quite big.
Okay, Kupi is a big, very old squat in Kreuzberg.
The barrier between East and West. Yeah, when there's a more militant demonstration, we try to solve that sexist problem, and that the first two, the front lines are without cismen. It's not always good, but it has changed a lot.
Okay.
Because many people realize that you don't have to be weak if you are feminine.
Definitely.
Yeah. Also, you have to be, don't have to be strong if you are masculine. Maybe these two, this has nothing to do with each other. And, so, although it's not my personal style because I can't do any sports. It's just not my style. I do it sometimes. For me, there's more, I think the threat from Christian fundamentalists is maybe much bigger because they are much more concentrated against, in their fight against homos and trans people and women. And there are about, more than 2 million in Germany.
Of
Christian fundamentalists. The Catholic Church is openly against us. Yeah. So, and they have that anti-abortion march every year with 5,000 or 6,000 persons in Berlin. And many, the CDU, the biggest party, supports the march.
And I was hearing about a counter march to that called What the F***.
Yeah. This is one of the demonstrations I always take part. There I have no problem to be that more aggressive way because there are people that think that I am male and they have to be, I have to be killed or they have to be cured. It's f***ing awful. And they still put their children into psychiatry if their children are heteronormative. This is done in Berlin. Still in Berlin at the university clinic, there's still that the chief of the sexology part of the Charité still says that you can cure children if they are homosexual or even trans, and you have to cure them because there's the danger that they might kill themselves later on, something like that. And he still destroys the lives of people there. It's so strange. This Sigmund Freud wrote so many things about pedosexuality, so many pages without even mentioning patriarchy. It was strange. Trick intervened, and then they said they won't write that kind of things anymore. Yeah. They won't be that positive anymore about the Charité and Dr. Klaus Bayer, it's called that way. This is quite horrible that it happens now in Berlin, that children are traumatized because they are not heteronormative. They get some kind of therapy there. And then
In the States, it happens, I think, as well. I'm not actually all that well informed about this, but I know that things like electroshock therapy have been outlawed for gay people. And homosexuality in the United States was taken out of the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, I think only in the 90s, actually.
If you have right-wing or Christian fundamentalist parents, and they are maybe more bourgeois people, they can do with the children what they want to.
Yes.
They always try to mix homosexuality or trans identity with pedophilia, but they don't mention that they themselves hurt their children pretty much. And in the more liberal parts of Germany, because they have yet, like in the USA, you have different states inside Germany. And the more liberal states, the governments try to do some school programs to teach the children that homosexuality and trans and inter is okay, or normal, maybe you could call it that way. And Christian fundamentalists and right-wing people try to stop that, their school programs, they try to stop it. And with that arguments, like if the children know that homosexuals exist, they might become homosexual, and this is child abuse. You abuse your children if you tell them that homosexuals exist, some kind of like that. I would have known that it's okay to be homosexual and to be trans. I would have transitioned many, many years before. But this was 1990 in Germany, and homosexuality was seen as a disease by maybe 80% of the population. So I'm homo and trans, and both things. It wouldn't have worked out then. I would have been put into psychiatry. So I had to wait for many, many years.
This situation regarding the children must create a lot of people who run away from home.
Yeah, and this is something that Queer Leben does. We have that, I already told you, we have that center trick, have that, we do it together with Queer Leben and Trialog. They do both some social work for youth or young adults that are trans and or homo, queer, inter, whatever. And many people are thrown out from their families. Others just come to Berlin because it's more liberal here to start do their transition stuff. I would have needed it 20 years ago, but this didn't exist then. So nowadays, it's better now. But you have to find the right people. And if you're from a conservative background with your parents, so it's more difficult.
In the States, we have a couple of explicitly LGBT-specific homeless shelters or transitional living facilities. But the waiting lists are very, very long to get in. Is that the same for facilities here?
Well, in Berlin, it's not that bad. You have said that things, they don't live inside the center, but there are enough flats for them. No. In Berlin, it's not that much of a problem. It works out.
Cool.
But you have a quite trans and homo-friendly Berlin government. So then they have that big Schwulenberatung. Yeah, the Schwulenberatung is, also gay, for gay men, it's 5 times bigger than the Lesbenberatung. but the Schwulenberatung, about 80 people work there. No, in Berlin, the situation is quite good, but I don't think that there are so many parents here in Berlin anymore that throw their children out of home. It's more of a problem like in more rural areas of Germany.
Yeah. You spoke a little bit about the relationship of LGBTQ struggles to anarchism a little bit briefly before, but I was wondering if there is an anarchist LGBTQ community in Berlin, and if not, how close are those two struggles, like anarchism and LGBTQ struggles?
We don't have, as I already told you, we don't have that much of a mixture with gay cis men. There are some gay anarchist cis men, but I think because the European right-wing movements and parties have the fight against women and against everyone who was not male, straight, cis, mm-hmm. as one of the biggest themes. So it's also one of the biggest themes of the anarchist movement, to fight against homophobia, to fight against sexism. And yeah, you get a large percentage of the trans people I know in Berlin are anarchists. And otherwise, many, many trans people are part of the radical left and the anarchist scene in Berlin, anarchist movement. Mm-hmm. And you have that queer feminist scene where nearly, they could describe themselves in political, with political terms, many would say anarchist, mm-hmm. much more than Marxist or liberal or social democrat style.
I've experienced a bunch of this feeling where there is a division between anarchism and LGBTQ struggles or feminist struggles or transfeminist struggles, that there is a misconception or a perhaps like slightly true but like generally misconception on the part of anarchist communities that LGBTQ struggle is like struggling for a mainstream agenda. So for example, like legislative reform and assimilation or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that happening in Berlin with like among like straight anarchists?
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to say that there is a conflict. We have that conflict in our organization in Trick, mm-hmm. because some tend to, you can't ride the assimilationist wave if you are non-binary.
Yes.
And you want to be seen as non-binary. You can't do it, then it won't work out that much. Mm-hmm. But there are some trans people active that are heteronormative, that are sexist and racist and right-wing. Mm-hmm. They just want that assimilationist stuff, like it was with some of the gay activists. And it's a conflict. It's a complicated because with many people, it's a kind of mixture, and many of the queer feminists tend to see tend to forget about the class society.
Right.
When you have that term classism, and for many of them, it just means that bourgeois people with poor parents are not accepted that well with other bourgeois people. Because it's only about the people that with proletarian parents that went to university, and not with the others that are still. Yeah, I didn't have poor parents, but I don't have any higher education officially, so I'm poor. I'm on social welfare. Will never get out of it. I won't work for any boss. Mm-hmm. I will never work again with sexist cis men. So I will stay poor. Quite often, when someone notices that I don't have that higher education, they think of me being stupid because I'm on social welfare. I must be stupid then.
Mm.
So yeah, and the thing with classism is if the rich people are nice to the poor people, it doesn't change that poor people are poor and rich people are rich. It's just not the same as with racism and sexism.
Yeah, but
you still have that capitalist structure. Sure. You have to end it. It doesn't change if you're not classist anymore. It doesn't change that much.
Yeah, I mean, it's attitudes toward people don't undercut the fact that there is this socioeconomic difference, discrepancy.
Yeah.
And
there are so many, I think there are many people in the queer feminist or feminist scene that think that there can be liberation within capitalism. And this is the problem. Maybe they don't think it very conscious, but they behave like that. This is the problem that, the politicians, they want to be friends with our organization. Yeah, and then there are some lesbian politicians inside the ruling parties, and they want to be friends with our organization, and some of the people in our organization are party members, the Green Party or with a left party. Not with the CDU. No,
for
that
sure.
won't work out. the CDU is still more or less against trans people. Many Christian fundamentalists have large positions inside the CDU. It's the same thing with the Republican Party.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's this question of politicians trying to use a potential connection to trans people in order to make them seem more.
Yeah. And then there's also, on the other hand, many of the trans activists think that it's important to be in good terms with the politics and with the health insurance people. I think it would be more important, yeah, to build more things with other poor people in society, with mm-hmm. proletarian people. I don't think that cross-class alliances work out. I don't believe in them.
Yeah, I've not seen them work out very well.
There are still that, because proletarian trans people, and 80% are proletarian in Germany,
yeah.
And with trans people even more. You won't solve it within capitalism. I just don't get it. I can't imagine that capitalism will function completely without patriarchy and racism.
I think they are all so intertwined with each other that they each hold each other up in all of these various complicated ways. And
so some anarchists or leftist trans people tend not to organize within trans interqueer. There was some kind of group, this was called Autotrans, of autonomous anarchist trans people.
Okay.
And maybe a trick is seen a bit as, yeah, lame, or too tame and lame, sometimes. But we have that structure, we have the rooms there, and there's the money, and so many radical anarchist, anarcho-feminist people use our infrastructure, but they won't, maybe will never be part of the organization. So it's fine with me.
Yeah, unfortunately, capitalism puts people into non-ideal situations all the time. And unfortunately, it seems to me that an explicitly like anarchist trans group would not be able to hold infrastructure very easily without some sort of like money from the state, like you said, or help from like people who have a little bit more. Is that
mm-hmm.
what do you think about that? Is that
well, there was that group called Transkenyade Fantifa, an Antifa group consisting of trans people, but they are very ideological. I would tend to say that it's not that important that we have that ideological unity, like with platformism, but the structure should be self-organization, and not that it's more like Greenpeace or another kind of NGO.
For sure.
This is more important, and you don't have to be anarchist in every part, because Trick only works, mainly works with that gender issues. So if we have anarchist position, that gender thing, it will work out fine, and we stay some kind of self-organization without hierarchies, or try to avoid hierarchies.
Yeah.
This is much more important than ideologically. We don't have to be anarchists, or not all of us have to be anarchists to fight for gender anarchy.
Yeah.
It's more that like the structure is more important, that it's not hierarchical.
Yeah, and it raises the question of, you know, who do you want to work with? Like, if you only want to work with anarchists, certainly, like, that's a thing. But if you want to work with a wider group of people who perhaps all share a similar series of oppressions or similar experiences, then, like, perhaps a more open...
Yeah, and we already have started that nationwide thing called Bundesverband Trans. It's some kind of loads of groups and people all over Germany that are doing some trans stuff. They're all quite radical. And this is quite good. They're not that heteronormative, no way, nothing. It includes all kinds of trans identities. There's no infighting between binary and non-binary people. So this is quite good. There are other trans groups that are not that well, but there are quite so much internet, so much media stuff, but they're not that representative. And it's funny that many trans people I know and don't have that much of a clue about other politics stuff, but when it comes to gender terms, they have anarchist positions.
Definitely.
So yeah, I can work with them. If they are not openly racist or something like that, we can work together. So this is quite good, and I don't mind if they're in otherwise more like social democrats or liberals. If we have that common goals, and they are willing to organize in a non-hierarchical way,
definitely,
it will work out, and it works out.
Thank you so much for speaking about all of that. It was super wonderful to hear experiences and context and all of that stuff. That's all the questions that I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't know, you wanted to have some more of these historical things when they started the LGBT movement in Germany during the 70s, or this, maybe you would hear some more of that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd love to hear a little more about the history.
Well, there was the first women's movement was in the 1920s or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was destroyed by the Nazis. They were already, in Berlin, was quite liberal with homosexuality, There were many homosexual bars, lesbian bars, and there were newspapers. You could buy them everywhere for lesbians. Word. They were quite big.
Back in the 20s?
In the 20s. So this was quite good, but it was all destroyed by the Nazis. And it took, after 1968, then the first homosexual group was Lesbians and Gays Together, Homosexual Action West Berlin. You know, Berlin was separated and the eastern part. But the strange thing that strange to say the eastern part of Germany was in some ways more liberal towards homosexuality for some years, maybe because of it was not that religious that much. So it wasn't like in the Soviet Union that you were maybe jailed or put into psychiatry because of sexuality, homosexuality. Maybe that nearly didn't happen inside the GDR. In the western part, it was like after 1968, they started the homosexual movement, and then quickly evolved that lesbian feminist movement because the lesbians were inside the mixed homosexual groups, so that it was quite male dominated, and then they had more in common maybe with the straight females.
For sure.
So there was some conflicts between straight and lesbians. There was much of lesbian separatism during the 1970s. And much of infighting, so many of the lesbian feminist things. Because of that infighting, what came smaller and smaller, there was a problem with bisexual women, the problem with BDSM, with pornography, pro and against pornography, the problem with butchers and farms and trans women and trans men, and conflicts. So the old lesbian feminist organizations that existed, that started during the 1970s, became smaller and smaller.
Okay.
Yeah, then there was that revival that came, out of the USA. That whole queer theory thing with Judith Butler, Donna Haraway, and so on.
Yeah.
And it took some years, but then I would say nearly all of the younger feminists are queer feminists and trans inclusive and so on. Maybe some authoritarian Marxist women groups, they call themselves also feminists, but they're quite, heteronormative, heteronormative. But they don't matter that much. Nearly all of the younger feminists, and maybe younger than 50, are now queer feminists. So this is quite good. And the main influence was from USA and the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite good now. There were some problems, but we're on a good way. And it's, during the last 10 years, it's got bigger and bigger and better, more inclusive. And there is that infighting thing, but when I see how many projects there are now, it's much more than it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I also have to say that the radical left scene in Germany, the mixed radical left scene, has put feminism back on its map.
Okay.
So it's one of the important, of all the non-authoritarian or the less authoritarian Marxist groups and mixed anarchist groups, is one of the main issues is fight against sexism, fight against homophobia and transphobia and so on.
Definitely.
This is quite good. It wasn't when I became part of the radical left anarchist scene during the 1990s, it was absolutely not like that. Very sexist and was very homophobic, very transphobic. And it is no longer that much.
I think that it's so important to keep in mind that nobody is immune from sexism. Like, no matter if you're trans, or if you're a woman, or if any of these, nothing shields you from patriarchy, and nothing shields you from transphobia and sexism and stuff. So it's really awesome to hear that stuff has been getting better, you know.
That's the thing that we have all learned that in school. We were taught to sing racist songs in school when I was a kid. Stopped maybe during the 90s somewhere. So it's quite difficult for me to get that pictures out of my mind that the whole society was full of racism. We were taught at school, but it was on television, and there were just so many other things. So something that when you had the weather report on television,
yes,
there was Germany, but Germany from 1937.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was like that. They stopped it when in 1990, not before.
Wow.
Before that, yeah, not a single German lived there anymore. Yeah, but it still said, and the government said, this is part of Germany. That's a f***ing revisionist. So the German society was much more illiberal 20 years ago, and so was the anarchist scene, more or less. It was much smaller then. The Marxist scene was much... The Marxist movement was much, much bigger because from my days you had the GDR and they sent loads of money. Then you had that Maoist groups that were quite big. And because in the western part of the world, Mao was so popular even among right wings. Many German neo-Nazis see Mao as a good figure. They see the North Korean regime.
Oh, no.
Now you have that kind of mixture, like the authoritarian leftists have many, many connections with right-wing people because they have that thing against Jews and then that against the USA.
Mm-hmm.
Support authoritarian regimes like the Iranian regime and Assad regime. So now you can't call them authoritarian leftists anymore. We have that term queerfront. Maybe call them fence walkers. It's some kind of strange mixture between socialist positions and nationalist positions. socialism.
Definitely.
And this is f***ing strong. So many people that maybe 20 years... some leading figures of the radical left scene are now demonstrating together with neo-Nazis. Not everything is fine here.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not. No.
Yeah. But some things are good.
Yeah. Yeah, like anywhere. Yeah.
And I think, more authoritarian leftist groups, they are not that well with feminists. They say, they are pro-feminist, and then they try to be supportive to the Kurdish feminist thing, but it's just like, they always speak of two sexes, they only speak of heterosexuality, they are extremely against illegal drugs and support legal drugs. And it's so strange that 20-year-old Germans see Mao as their idol.
That's very odd.
Because maybe they don't know that much about history.
Who knows how these trends get started? And it's very interesting to see what people hold on to and what people will pick up from history and what people won't pick up from history. I don't know. It's very odd.
But I thought there's some kind of learning process that after decades and decades, finally nearly everyone learned that Stalin was an asshole. But there are still some people who like Stalin and Mao. They support Stalin and Mao and think that they are great guys. And especially with the Maoist groups, you have many parts of their ideology would work out fine with fascism, I think. They're squares. They try to look like they have something to do with youth culture, but it won't work out.
Yeah, no.
I don't think it will work out. I hope they will diminish and that the better of them will sooner or later get in contact with more libertarian, you can't say it in English.
Anarchist?
More not that authoritarian ideology anymore, but I don't know. What you call libertarian in the US sense is called anarcho-capitalism here.
Yes.
And they're quite popular. These are maybe in Germany, these are the same people.
Yeah.
Yeah, national anarchists are the same as anarcho-capitalists. They're just the same group of people.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're nationalists and they're also anarcho-capitalists. Yeah, and they're all quite... There's strong connections with the Nazi movement.
Yeah.
Now, there's a thing with the media here that you have from time to time, there's some famous figure who was in former times maybe not that political or maybe more social democrat and then evolves into fascism. the SPD social democrat politician Thilo Sarrazin.
Okay.
And his books sold millions and millions. And so you have to see that there are millions of Germans that are extremely anti-homo and anti-women.
Yeah.
So, it is a problem.
Definitely.
But the anarchist movement is now 10 or 20 times bigger than it was 10 years ago.
That's so great.
Yeah.
What do you think has contributed to that? Just is it a cultural shift or just something?
I don't know. Maybe it's some kind of society as a whole is able to learn sometimes. I don't know. I wouldn't say that you can't think about society as a single person.
No.
But it took some time to learn that authoritarian Marxism is no solution, that party politics is no solution. Maybe that worked out well after some decades. That I know when I became part of the anarchist movement 20 years ago, then many, many books were published and many people read them, and then newer books were published that were even better, and it got better and better and better, and the discussions were going on. It was more... when you have that open discussion thing, then the anarchist movement has spread all over the world.
Yes, it has.
I don't know if it was, maybe it's as strong as it was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me for so long about this.
I can talk for hours and hours. Yeah. And it's quite fun for me because I can work on my English skills.
We have been speaking with Saskia about LGBT activism in Berlin and how it intersects with anti-racist organizing and anti-fascist organizing and also feminist organizing. Thanks for listening. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's selection of offbeat, underground, and independent literature can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop, and there you can also see a complete list of their events.